Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you may be listening. And once again, thank you for listening. This is Chain Wrestling with Mags and Si. I am the slightly out of breath because I'm unfit and had to run up the stairs because I was running late, Si. And with me, as always, he is the cruiserweight title to my light heavyweight title. Not that either of us could actually make the weight limit. He is... The Japanese buzzsaw to my lame-ass hacksaw, Ho. He is also a podcaster who says, rather to jeer his mist in the face than a fist in his special place. Mr. Mags, how are we doing, sir?
I am doing really well. Jesus Christ, I could make that light heavyweight limit twice over, I guess.
Yeah, I think due to lockdown and my my lack of movement, my terrible eating habits, my terrible drinking habits, this is the heaviest I've ever been in my whole life.
Mm-hmm. So I feel you, mate. I absolutely feel you.
Not a good look, man. Not a good look. I mean, put it into context. I just explained to Max before I pressed record then. The day kind of got away from me today. I was speaking to somebody on the phone. I was making a few notes to sort of have the format ready for the show. That's right. Believe it or not, some prep does go into this. We don't press record. We don't just press record and wing it, believe it or not. And before I knew it, it was 7:02. So straight away, I'm like, oh, Streif, I need to get upstairs and set my laptop up and get ready to record with Mags. So I had to grab all my bits and bobs, ran upstairs, then realised I didn't have my drink, so I had to run back downstairs to get my drink, and then I had to run back upstairs again. The whole time I'm dodging Lemmy, who for some reason has been an absolute dickhead today. I'm treading on cat biscuits on the steps, barefoot, so that hurts like hell. They're like little miniature brown Legos. That's fantastic. So, yeah, I'm now sitting here, a few minutes gone past the normal recording time we have of 7 o'clock, gasping for breath because I'm incredibly unfit.
It's the life we lead as wrestling fans and podcasters. That's the standard look for us. We have to be long-haired, unfit, and also late to every recording. It's simply, it's how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of the long hair and stuff, I've noticed with my ever-expanding build and my beer gut and the fact that my beard has come back through again since shaving off for a job interview. And then I've got to the stage now where I don't tie my hair up properly. I just literally chuck it in chuck a band on it to get it out of my face.
Yeah.
Lazily, because I'm not going anywhere. I've started to look a little bit like the guy in The Simpsons who owns the comic book store.
Worst episode ever.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the amount I've been drinking during this lockdown, I'm probably going to be turning yellow, you know, soon too.
So it's like,
yeah. So I'm sort of looking at it, I'm thinking, I think I need to make some life-altering decisions here. I can't carry on like this much longer, but hopefully with lockdowns coming to an end very soon, you know, the way it's looking, I can make those slight alterations and hopefully not turn into a yellow guy from The Simpsons with a big belly and a crappy ponytail. So...
It sounds to me like living the dream, if that's what you've become.
Well, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, on the plus side, I, as far as I know, got a job now, Mags.
Yes, you did. Let everyone know, because one of the best things about this is like the kind of like the insight we get to each other's like personal lives. And I've really gone on this journey with you about our kind of like securing work and stuff like that. So yeah, I'll be interested to hear the details.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I applied for this role a while back. I didn't hear nothing bad, didn't think nothing of it. And then I got a random email. Well, no, actually, I didn't. I got a text, believe it or not, saying, am I still interested in this role? I responded, yes, because, you know, again, agency work is not been suitable at all. I'm in and out of work, day here, day there. It's no good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just said yes, and she messaged back saying, when can I go in for an interview? She's read through my CV and thinks it's great and so on. And basically it's ended up with me going in the next day. And then they got hold of me again the day after to say, do I want the job? So I was like, well, yes, very much, please. So yeah. I'm waiting for the bank holidays to be done and dusted. And then early this week, I will find out my actual days and shifts and so on. And it's basically similar to what I was doing before, where I was working before I got laid off because of the whole coronavirus situation. It's a warehouse with car parts and so on. So it's very much going back into what I'd done for quite a few years previously, but going in as opposed to where I was kind of running the place there, going in bottom rung, I guess. But it's fine because it's work and it's a situation I'm familiar with, and there's going to be more hours available when they're busy and so on. So I'm just happy to be back working, buddy.
Yeah, I can totally get how frustrating it's been for you, and like I know full well the effort you've put in, and it's just the dice haven't gone your way, unfortunately. But I'm glad that you've got something that you're confident with, and you know you can do it, and most of all, it's regular income, which is at this time of the year, it's essential. So yeah, good on you, mate.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, but it is a big thing for me and my family to be in that situation. Like I said, it's the actual contract to start was advertised as being part time hours, but she said about more going over time and the longer I stay there and so on. So hopefully it'll all balance out, but it's actually with the company as opposed to through an agency. So that makes a big difference to me, you know, because I'm not going to be messed around as much. So
yeah, exactly. And the fact that, you know, it's permanent and it's working for the company, and you know that you're not going to get that phone call the day of, oh, you're not wanted today, stuff like that. You don't have that worry. So really, really proud of you, mate.
Yeah, cheers, buddy. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. How's your week been, mate? Any news? Anything exciting? Or has it just been the same old, same old?
It's been all right. I mean, we had a little bit of clement weather this week. So me and the family, we bought a bouncy castle for the grandkids. And the first grandkid, Fia, she hated it. Screams her head off. Didn't want to go on it. Lexa, who is normally the more kind of like nervy of the two older granddaughters, she's normally the weary one. Oh, she loved it straight on. Bounce, bounce, bounce. So yeah, that got a lot of use. And I've spent the last day or so trying to increase my knowledge of whiskey, because the wife has bought me a whiskey stand for the bottle, so it looks posh. And I thought, I can't keep having like Jameson's or white Macau whiskey. I've got to look classy. So I've been looking at maybe increasing my whiskey knowledge.
Okay. I mean, whiskey isn't something that I know a great deal about. I don't mind a bit of whiskey here and there, but I'm not a massive fan, to be honest. I mean, maybe that's changed as I've got older. I've not tried it in quite a while. Perhaps I should give it a go again, but it's not really something that I went for in previous years.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something you really enjoy then, Max? Is it?
It's something that I've kind of like grown into. I used to be like a cider bloke. If it got to spirits, it was vodka. And then like over the last, say, the last decade or so, whether it's a change in palate, a change in taste, just growing up, I suppose, I've kind of like shifted onto whiskies, and I've stuck with like the general ones that people know, like I said, Jameson's, Jack Daniels. I've never really kind of strayed away. And then recently, I obviously got the Conor McGregor one as a gift a bit ago for Christmas. And it's kind of like, I've started like understanding the different flavors and the different kind of back notes and the smells that you get from whiskey, and it's really kind of piqued my interest. So I've tried a few different ones, and can like I've got to the point where now I can kind of tell the difference. Where before it was literally just a whiskey is a whiskey is a whiskey, they all tend to taste the same. Now I'm getting to that point where I can distinguish between them. And yeah, I think I'm an expert now, so I need to man up and get some decent branded whiskies in. So I was doing a bit of research yesterday, just as we were doing just before we were doing Radio Techers, and I found this website called Masters of Malt. And you know, there's a bottle of whiskey that is 58 years old, so it's aged really well, and it's 60,000 pounds a bottle.
Whoa. So you got two, yeah?
Yeah, one for Saturday, one for Sunday. No, it just scandalous. I was there thinking 25 quid is a stretch. Mm. And then blokes are out there paying 60 quid. You can get a sample, which is like 3 centilitres, which is just over a single shot. And that was like 700 quid.
Jesus.
Yeah, for a single. So
that's insane.
I've got a way to go yet before I'm up there. But yeah, it's just something I've kind of like, I get these little obsessions, and this is the current one.
700 quid for a shot, man. That's mental. I complain about the prices of going out for a drink when we sort of cross the bypass and go to Cheltenham. You know, our slightly more posh neighbours.
Three,
you know,
quid a pan, bloody rip off.
Definitely. I mean, prices are ridiculous anyway. You can see why pubs are dying out, can you? But it's tax, I suppose, and all that sort of stuff. But yeah. Okay. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't want to sort of go too much into details about what we're currently drinking. I think there's enough podcasts around at the moment that do that, Mags, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't want to be stepping on anybody's toes, wink, wink, bang, bang, wink, wink, unbooking the territory.
Yeah, Jesus, I don't want to get Christ. Involved. I don't want to get involved in it. We're going to be like Switzerland. We're going to be neutral.
Yeah, that's a Monday night war I am not interested in being part of.
No, definitely not, mate. Definitely not. Speaking of Bang Bang and UTT Rob's podcast and so on, people that we speak to on Twitter, etc., should we go to Twitter, Mags, and have a little look at some of the things that we've had this week?
Let's do that, sir.
I bloody allows that for a segue, eh? That was good, wasn't it?
I know, professional. I didn't even know you were going there. It's such a professional.
I'm amazed myself sometimes. But that's me done for the rest of the show. I'm going to be crap for the rest of it. It's... Yeah, so on Twitter this week, our additional topic, I guess, as we refer to it as sometimes, we were looking for your song cover versions, your musical cover versions, whether they be good, bad, embarrassing, whatever, really. Purely because something popped up on my Facebook the other day. Somebody shared the video of Metallica doing the Thin Lizzy track, Whiskey in a Jar. And it's a great cover version. And I kind of got something going in my head a little bit. And I remember our discussion on last week's episode of Chain Wrestling about Celine Dion and the fact that she covered an AC/DC song, and may she burn in hell for that. But it kind of snowballed from there. And that's where we've ended up on the topic that we have today. Yeah, Max, I mean, cover versions and so on for yourself. Is there any that stand out particularly to you as being brilliant or awful?
When you mentioned this topic on Twitter, this one just hit with me straight away. I wouldn't say I'm a music buff, but I like a lot of different styles of music. And one of the things that I do like is other people making their own versions of someone else's song. I've got a friend on Twitter called John Olin, and he's actually made a full kind of Spotify playlist of just tons and tons of great cover tracks from other artists, and yeah, it's just I love going to listen to just that whole playlist and have it on in the background, and yeah, you can really discover that the way people can interpret a song. It just it blows my mind how one person who created the song has one singular vision for it, and then someone else can come along and totally transform it and make it into something totally different. It's really kind of a mind-boggling and really talented for me. So some that stand out for me, I like a track called by the Future Heads called Hounds of Love, originally done by Kate Bush. I think that's a really good kind of a take on a very unique song with Kate Bush in it. Then there's a full album. You know the band Weezer?
Yes.
A couple of years ago, they released an album called The Teal Album, where it was literally just an album full of cover versions. So they've done Africa's, they've done Everybody Wants to Rule the World, they've done Sweet Dreams, they've done Take On Me, No Scrubs from TLC, which is an interesting one, Billie Jean. They did Stand By Me, so that if you're into cover versions, that's a really good album to listen to. Then I like a couple that Mark Ronson has done. He did a Smiths track called Stop Me. If you've heard this one before, that's a banging tune. I like Mark Ronson's take on that. And then a couple of to finish up, a couple of Oasis ones. They did a cover of I Am the Walrus Live, which is just outstanding. And then for the release of Don't Look Back in Anger, they did a cover of Slade's Come On Feel the Noise, and it's just an absolute bop of a track. It's just it's one of those that just gets you that banging away. Yeah, so yeah, they're somewhat really stand out to me.
I bloody love a bit of Slade, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I love Slade.
So Oasis. Underappreciated.
Oh yeah, a lot of people just go, "Oh, it's a Christmas record." That's all it is. But no, absolutely fantastic, Slade. Oasis also did a cover of "You Got to Hide Your Love Away" by the Beatles, mm-hmm. which is a B track. That's one of my favourite Beatles tracks, and I think that's a really, really good cover as well. You say about albums that are actually mentioning the Weezer album first of all. Sorry, Weezer album, wasn't it? Sorry, that you mentioned. Yeah, that cover of Toto, Africa, that was played like every hour on, I think it's Absolute Radio or something like that, in one of the jobs that I had. And it got to a stage where I thought, this is a really cool cover. After a week, I wanted to kill even myself.
Just stab yourself in the
smash ears. The radio, track down Weezer and kill them. Oh, God, it drove me batty, which is a real shame because I thought it was a great cover. But you speak about albums that are predominantly, you know, literally all cover versions. As most people know, my wheelhouse, I guess, when it comes to music is very much in the sort of rock stroke metal side of things. And quite a bit of it is more old school. I like when rock and metal bands cover songs that are not rock and metal originally, if that makes sense. And you've got an album by Motorhead, one of my personal favorite bands, called Undercover. And they've got, again, it's a whole album of covers, and some are a bit of a dodgy ground, a bit of a miss, but they do a really good cover of God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols. And they do, and this is, I'm going to say some things during this little segment of our show, Mags, that are going to upset some people. I know it, and I'm going to apologize in advance if it upsets people, but I'm going to say some things that are going to upset people about original versions not being as good as certain covers. And I'm probably going to upset some people when I say, no, that's shite, when they like it or whatever. But Heroes by David Bowie, absolutely fantastic record. I love it. The Motorhead version, man, is better. It is so good.
The Noel Gallagher version is also incredibly good.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant stuff. Another favorite band of mine is the American rock band Wasp.
Okay.
They haven't done an album of covers, but they do tend to have, I'd say probably on three quarters of their albums, they have a cover on there, and then they have a lot of covers as B tracks and so on. I've got a few here. They did a really good cover of Paint It Black by the Rolling Stones, a really good cover of Burn by Deep Purple. They did a cover of When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin, which I think is better than the original because I just never got Zeppelin, as we discovered the other day. Mm-hmm. The best one for me, though, is they did The Real Me, which I believe was a Who song originally. The Wasp version, again, I think is better than the original. On the other side of the coin, they did Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting by Elton John. They did a cover of that. Oh my God, it makes me want to vomit. It is terrible. And bear in mind, I love Wasp. I absolutely adore Wasp, but this is just freaking dog dirt, man. It is terrible stuff. Terrible, terrible stuff. But the people we are more interested in, their opinions, are those who message into the show. We've had an absolutely brilliant response yet again. Thank you so, so much to everyone who tweeted at @chain_wrestling in response to this. There's quite a few. So first of all, if I read yours out and don't always give your Twitter handle, I apologise. If I don't read yours out at all, again, I apologise. And we're going to have to get through these quite quickly because we don't want to be doing a 3-hour show on cover versions when we've actually got a bit of wrestling to talk about.
I happily would. this is primarily a wrestling podcast.
Well, that's it. Perhaps we could have a spin-off, you know, just talking about cover songs. What I thought we'd do, Mags, is I would just literally scan through them in the order we received them on Twitter. And then we can just very quickly say, yeah, like that. Nope, that's shite, get in the bin. Or nope, not heard that, I'll have to check it out, yeah?
Sounds good.
Okay. Very early to respond to us, which was great, literally within minutes of the post going up on Twitter. Griffin K at Griffin K1 on Twitter. So some covers to think about. A Hazy Shade of Winter. I don't think I know that one, do I?
Yep, not heard that.
Under the Bridge.
Bah, who's the cover though? Because it's been covered a couple of times. It got covered, I think, by All Saints, which is an interesting version.
Is that the Red Hot Chili Peppers record?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like that. All Along the Watchtower. That was Hendrix classic. Covered that. Yeah.
Hendrix made that his own.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You Can't Hurry Love. Now, is that a Phil Collins record?
It is. I wonder who did the cover of that. That'll be interesting to listen to.
Hmm. Also, You Can't Hurry Love was. Is it the one that the video with the Ultimate Warrior in? Have you seen that?
With the Phil Collins video with the Ultimate Warrior in.
Yeah, have you never seen that?
No, I've never seen that.
Oh, mate.
I don't think I have, unless I've
send it you when we're done recording, and I will also tag it on the bottom of the episode when it comes out in case anyone else hasn't seen it. I'll put the link up so you see this video. It was I think it was a charity record, and they wanted somebody from the WWF to be involved.
Warrior.
So well, the Warrior was champion at the time, so they had Warrior, and basically, the Ultimate Warrior's in the ring with Phil Collins as he's singing this song. It may not be this actual one, but it's a Phil Collins track anyway, and he's basically beating up Phil Collins. But the best bit is at the very very beginning. Warrior has stood there in full gear, title belt, hair done, the whole shebang, dancing and bopping along with Phil Collins. It's wow. Glorious. I'll send you the link as soon as we're done, Mags. I'll send you the link. And lastly, The Man Who Stole the World, which is...
Bowie. Again.
Yeah, covered by Nirvana when they did their Unplugged in New York set. And I really, really like that cover. That's a brilliant cover as well.
Great shout, yeah. I mean, going back to Nirvana, one that I should have really mentioned, and I don't think it got mentioned on Twitter, was Tori Amos covering Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh, I don't think I know that either. I'm going to have to check that out.
Oh, it's haunting, the way she it's totally nothing like the original at all. It's piano and like a really kind of slowed down voice. Oh, she kills it.
Oh, so I'm going to end up listening back to this episode, making notes and putting together my own playlist, I think. Same, yeah. Bert Macklin, also very quick to respond, at Bert Macklin 11, where he says, when I think of a great cover song, I think of Jimi Hendrix version of All Along the Watchtower. And yeah, absolute banger.
Yeah, the epitome of it, yeah.
Yeah. At Five Nerds Go, Camacho Man. I've got no idea what that is.
Okay, so there's a story behind this, and I knew this one was coming up. So, you know Sunita. Do you remember? Right, so she did a song called Macho Man.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so what Camacho Man is, do you know Gorillaz of Destiny?
Yes.
There's a wrestler there, Tangaloa.
Mm-hmm.
He had a spell in WWE as the wrestler Camacho.
Okay.
And Camacho Man is Matt from Five Nerds' rendition of Macho Man, but with Macho taken out for Camacho.
Okay.
He's done it quite a few times on the Five Nerds podcast, but he's also done it on a couple of others. If you ever get a chance to listen to it, it's something. It's certainly something.
I'll check it out. I'll check it out. Our good buddy Rob, at UTT Rob, he says, bizarre, but the first cover that came into his head was Dizzy, the Vic Reeves and the Wonder Stuff version.
Oh, I
can remember that being out. Yeah, I can remember that being out. It got quite high in the charts, didn't it?
I think it got to number one. I'm sure it did. That's a great cover.
Mm,
another one as well that makes you think that is better than the original.
Yes. Yes. We had a lot of love for Disturbed from Twitter mags. We have at Scott WWEF1, Scott Robertson, saying they do a brilliant cover of Land of Confusion.
Okay.
And they do. It's absolutely brilliant. It is fantastic. I mean, Disturbed do a few different covers, and they are really, really good. Well worth checking out if you've not heard them before. At Carry the Gary, GH, he says, great covers. Boys of Summer by the Ataris. I'm not familiar with that one.
I mean, I know the original. I'd have not heard the cover. I'd be one I'd be definitely going to check out.
Mad World by Gary Jules.
Yep, great one.
Lake of Fire by Nirvana. Yeah, that is a banger. I know that
one. It is, yeah.
White Lines by Duran Duran. Don't think I know that.
I honestly thought that was the original.
Okay. I can't pass any comment because I have no idea what that is. I'm going to check that out as well. I'm going to come across as really opinionated, but also really, really ill-informed when it comes to it. uneducated and uncultured, I think, during this. Word Up by Gunn. Yeah, that is brilliant. That's really good.
Yeah. And a lot better than the Mel B version. She did a version of it, and that stank.
Oh, man, my mind must have blocked that out. That sounds terrible. Smooth Criminal by Alien Ant Farm. Yeah, that's good. I enjoy that.
Yeah, that is a bop. And the video is good as well.
Yeah. And a bad cover, he says here, is Under the Bridge by All Saints. That's the second appearance we've had that pop up.
It was terrible.
Yes, it was. Good Cop Bad Cop at Good Bad Wrestle on Twitter. They sent a video here that I will reshare when the episode comes out of Limp Bizkit versus Thomas the Tank Engine doing break stuff. So yeah, I'm gonna have to reshare that when the video comes out. Jimi Hendrix. Sorry, Max.
I would say that sounds interesting.
Yeah, definitely. more from Good Cop Bad Cop. Jimi Hendrix doing the Star Spangled Banner anthem live. It's been done quite a few times since, hasn't it? A guitarist playing it as a solo.
Yeah.
I believe Zakk Wylde from Black Label Society has done a version and so on. But yeah, Hendrix is just amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, it was like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. Another here from Good Cop Bad Cop Wrestling Podcast. He says, apparently this is a hot take, but Run by Leona Lewis is way better than Snow Patrol's original.
Okay. It's not only is it a hot take, it's a terrible take from an account that has many, many terrible takes. That may be the worst one they've ever had. the Snow Patrol version is a million times better than the Leona Lewis version. They should be ashamed that they've said that.
Wow, you're fired up.
That's annoyed me. Raymond, Matt, you are in the bad books.
I don't know either version, so again, I'm going to have to check. I'm going to have so much fun tonight after I've listened back to this and going to look all these songs up. Our good buddy Dan Griffin, at DanGriffin21. Hiya, Dan. Hope you're well. We have Wheatus cover of A Little Respect.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Stereophonics cover of Handbags and Glad Rags.
Yeah, classic.
Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt. Yeah, that is superb. That's much better than the original.
Yeah.
Muse's cover of Feeling Good.
Yeah, I mean, I like I'm not a massive Muse fan. I like a few of their tracks, but that's one of them that is pretty good.
Miley Cyrus cover of Jolene. Now, I've not heard the Cyrus version, but
you can get in the bin.
Yeah, you can't beat a bit of Dolly, can you?
Mm-hmm.
Lenny Kravitz cover of American Woman.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good one.
Sinead O'Connor's cover of Nothing Compares to You. I didn't realise that was a cover.
Yeah, again, another one that that she's took the song and basically made it her own.
And another one here from Dan as well, a bit more love for Disturbed, covering Sound of Silence. And again, that is fantastic, a brilliant cover version by Disturbed again.
Yep.
Bang Bang Podcast, Andy, at Bang Bang Podcast on Twitter. Land of Confusion by Disturbed again. This one is, it wouldn't have entered my mind any spot on. It's a brilliant cover version. Kurt Angle singing He's Just a Sexy Kurt on SmackDown that time. Fantastic cover version.
That was brilliant. It'll make your ankle hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Saint Etienne, Only Love Can Break Your Heart. Don't think I know that.
Yeah, Saint Etienne was like a mid-90s kind of like Brit poppy-esque band. I don't think they was around for that long, but I vaguely remember that. It's one that I'll have to go back and kind of refresh my memory on.
Take the Skinheads Bowling by the Manics.
Okay, that will be one Paul Toller loves, because he loves anything Manic Street Preachers, but yeah, I can't say I know that one.
Bizarre Love Triangle by Frente, I think that is.
No, that's totally, I have absolutely no clue.
No, nor do I. Again, we'll have to look all these up and maybe report back on a future episode, Mags, and let people know what we think.
Yeah.
Interstate Wrestling Podcast, at IS Wrestling Pod. Travis covering Baby One More Time. Now, they sent a YouTube link to us on Twitter when they sent us this suggestion. And I actually did listen to it when it arrived, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, I like that song anyway. It's a real proper catchy pop tune, but the Travis cover I thought was great.
It is a great cover. Travis is one of those kind of really underrated bands where I'll go on Spotify and I'll just put on a Travis album and it just whiles away the hours, because they're so good.
Philip Goad, at Goad Philip on Twitter. Counting Crows, Hard to Handle.
Interesting. I don't think I know that one. I think they did a cover of Mr. Jones as well, if I remember rightly, Counting Crows.
Okay.
But yeah, I've not heard the first one you mentioned.
No Doubt, It's My Life. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I don't. It's not a good one.
No?
No.
Okay, I'll skip that one. Higher Ground by the Chili Peppers. And I'm not a big Chili Peppers fan, as I've said before, so.
That's a hot, spicy take.
It is, mate. It is. Not as hot as me saying, as a rock fan, that I don't get Zeppelin. That always gets me a reaction. But the Chili is like the second one down for me. I don't know if it's the crossover into more sort of, I don't know how you'd word it, maybe a bit of funk in there or whatever, but it's not really my cup of tea, to be fair.
Well, I think you're wrong. Other Side may be the most beautifully haunting track that has ever been written. And so you take your hot take and put it in the bin.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I dislike all of it. There's some tracks I do really enjoy.
Stick with your viewpoint now, Simon. You're not changing your tune now.
Right,
you Red Hot Chili Pepper hater.
Fine. Fuck the Chilies. Up All Saints. There we go. All right. Handy T1TF, a good supporter of the show, a great bloke, someone I speak to quite a bit on Twitter. Thank you for listening and taking the time to message, my friend. He says the best cover, in his opinion, is Simple Man by Shinedown. He grew up a huge fan of the original, but thinks the remake is even better. Now, this for me was a difficult one, because Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd, again, I listened to that. I must listen to that, I reckon, every other day at least. I love that record, live versions, anything. And I checked out the Shinedown version that Handy has suggested here. And I'll tell you what, Handy, I'm not 100% sure on being better than the original, but it's up there. I really enjoyed it, my friend.
Well, that's good. I mean, this whole kind of topic has been really good at like opening your eyes and getting some new music in your rotation. So if it's been able to do that, then good on it. I mean, I don't know if I can't remember the Shinedown version, if I've heard it or not. So I will have to go on and listen to it. But yeah, I really don't mind the original.
Yeah, the original's brilliant. I mean, Skinner are fantastic anyway. But MGB Mason, at MGB Wrestling Pod. Hiya, Mason. How you doing, buddy? He says, this is painful for my dad to type, but the Crazy Frog remixes are all better than the originals. A little bit of context for people listening there. Mason is how old, Max? 13, is he? Is he younger than that?
He may be 13. I think he started podcasting when he was like 10.
Yeah.
About 13 now.
Yeah, so his dad obviously helps him run the Twitter account for his show. So that's why he's saying there it's painful for his dad to type his thoughts on that. I only really know the one Crazy Frog song, and that's the one that they did from Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, the Axel F one.
Yeah.
Bim, 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 bim. Yeah, it's terrible. Any version, that's as much of it as you're getting.
I'll just sample it and put it on a loop, mate.
Just on a loop. A 2-hour loop. No, yeah. Any Crazy Frog song is absolutely gatch.
Okay. Why don't you say what you really think, Mags?
Yeah, that's a bad take, Mason, and for that I may have to block you on Twitter.
What are you on about? You're only saying that because he's probably blocked you already.
Yeah, it would not surprise me.
Him and CM Punk.
And Austin,
yeah. And MGB Graham at MGB Graham on Twitter said that 25 years ago-ish, people believed that the Mike Flowers Pops version of Wonderwall was the original, and Oasis had done a cover of it.
Nobody in the world ever believed that.
Well, I didn't believe that, of course, because I, you know, growing up in the UK, Oasis being a UK band and they were huge and so on, that never entered my mind. I mean, I believe they're in the States, aren't they? So it may have been different over there. I'm not sure, Mags.
Well, I mean, I don't actually mind the Mike Flowers Pops. Of its time, it worked, I suppose, because it was different. It was kooky. I wouldn't listen to it now. It's not like one I'd go and search out on Spotify or anything like that. But I believe that may be Mason's pick, and Graham actually is the big Crazy Frog fan. So
you reckon, and he's just trying to hide the truth.
Yeah, just pin the blame on his kid, which is Graham. That's deplorable.
It's terrible.
Disgusting.
I'm shocked and stunned. And
I'm ashamed we share a network with him. First of all, for pinning the blame on his son, and then second of all, for liking Crazy Frog. Graham, you should be disgusting yourself.
I may have to, honestly, Matt, I may have to just pause the recording and take a minute. I'm that enraged.
you want to scream into the microphone.
I'm not going to. I'm going to power on for the sake of our listeners and for the sake of Mason.
Wipe it from your memory.
Yeah, I'm going to carry on.
His ridiculous takes.
Exactly. We shall carry on for Mason, who's obviously being framed by his old man there.
Yes.
Ricky and Clive Wrestling Show, at Ricky and Clive. Our good buddies there. Thank you again for interacting, fellas. Really, really appreciate it. And also, the episode recently where it was a solo podcast. I got the utmost respect. I listened to that whole show. The utmost respect for anyone who can do that on their own. The idea blows my mind. So I really enjoyed listening to that. It was a great show. Anyone who's not listened to the Ricky and Clive Wrestling Show, go and check it out. Find them on Twitter. There'll be links to their shows there. It's well worth it. It's a great podcast.
Two great guys as well. I've been on their show numbers of times, and they've been on shows that I've been involved in. Two absolutely great guys. Great senses of humour. Just really good to chat with. And probably my favourite Scottish people in the world, maybe.
Fair enough. Clive, this is, because it's got a little C next to it. It says Baker Street covered by the Foo Fighters.
Okay. I can't say I really remember that one, but any cover of Baker Street is usually a banger.
And the last one that I've got record of here that came to us via Twitter, again, if I have missed any, I am hugely apologetic. I really appreciate everyone messaging the show. This is Casanova Camera at the Nova of Cass on Twitter. Says he is a fan of Head Like a Hole, as done by Devo. Baby One More Time, as done by the Zappa Brothers. I know the song, but I'm not familiar, obviously, with that.
No, I don't think I've heard either of those, but there'll certainly be some I'll definitely go and look out for.
Yeah, definitely. Something that came to my attention yesterday is that one of my favourite songs by a band I absolutely adore, Kiss. It is from, I very much love Kiss when they took the makeup off in the mid-80s, because it's the cheesy pop, big hair, kind of over-the-topness, sort of Motley Crue-esque glam metal, I suppose. And that's right up my street as well. They released a song called Tears Are Falling, and it's got a wonderful, silly, crazy, stupid video with it. I put that on when I was looking into covers and so on myself. I was playing that, and it actually came up as a cover, and I had no idea about this.
Oh, wow.
So, and this is a bit of a funny one, because I love this record. I've been playing it for as long as I can remember. I went and looked it up. It's actually Tears Are Falling is a song by Bonnie Tyler. But the
really?
Funny, yeah. The funny twist is, though, it was written by Paul Stanley from Kiss. So Paul Stanley from Kiss wrote this song. Again, I found all this out yesterday. This is all it is. Paul Stanley from Kiss wrote this song. Bonnie Tyler recorded it. It didn't chart anywhere other than Finland, but it still appears on like her best of albums and all this sort of stuff and compilation CDs and that. And then Kiss released it themselves as part of their, I think it's Hot in the Shade album that they released in 88-ish. And it was a big hit for Kiss. So it's weird, because it's like a cover version of a song he's written, I suppose.
That's very much like cover Inception, almost.
Yeah, really strange, really strange. But, yeah, there we go. You got any more to add to that then, Mags? Or?
I think this can be a topic that we can revisit a number of times. There's just so many like really cool covers and so many really kind of ridiculous ones. I will throw another one out though, and I'm gonna have to actually check my Spotify to find out exactly who covered it, but I'm quite a big gamer, and there's a series that I really enjoy called The Witcher, and they made a Netflix TV program of the game, but that's got a theme song that has been covered by an artist called Dan, I want to say Vesak, and it's kind of like a metal version of the theme tune. Now the theme tune is kind of like the bard style. The guy singing it has got like a lute, and it's kind of like. What kind of era would you call it? Almost like the era of fairies and pixies and stuff like that. Well, this guy Dan Vesak does a really cool kind of heavy rock kind of metal remix of it, and it's quality. It was for a long time just number one in my Spotify play rotation. Definitely go and check that one out.
Yeah, definitely. Very quickly, The Ultimate Warrior and Phil Collins, the song was actually Two Hearts, not what I thought it was earlier. Just come to me now.
I'm still going to watch it.
I'll send you the link. It is very, very funny. It is very, very funny. Ultimate Warrior duetting with Phil Collins. Not that he does much singing, but yeah. Ultimate Warrior duetting with Phil Collins. I'd love it if there was other wrestlers duetting with other 80s pop icons, you know, like Hulk Hogan singing with, I don't know, Whitney Houston or something randomly.
We did get The Rock getting a number three hit with Wyclef Jean one time.
Yeah, that's true.
That happened.
Yeah, it did. It did indeed. It did indeed. Okay, again, thank you very, very much to everybody for getting in contact with the show, whether that's on the Twitter or Facebook, obviously predominantly Twitter. You can find us on both at @chain_wrestling, and it's hugely, hugely appreciated, as is everyone who voted in this week's poll. And the winner of the poll was X-Pac versus Tajiri from SummerSlam 2001. It was behind for quite a while, to be honest. And I think it was literally in the last 90 minutes or so. There's a few votes that flew in, and it jumped ahead and by 52% won the poll. But, you know, again, plenty of people voting and retweeting. So thank you to everyone for that. That was your selection there, Mags. So, yeah, should we have a little look at it now?
Let's do it, sir.
Hi, yes, it's me, Benny, the voiceover guy. I'm back. I'm still owed money from Cyan Mags, as mentioned last time, but I've been assured it will be all sorted soon. So I agreed to do another voiceover here for Chain Wrestling. However, I do not believe Cyan Mags at all. So knowing how amateur they are and how they won't listen to this before putting it on their show, I have decided to throw the script away.
We interrupt your regular broadcast to bring you this important news bulletin.
Come join me on my podcast, One More Match, a wrestling podcast. One More Match with Benny Mac dives into WWE matches from the past and present, from the good, the bad, and the ugly. So let's go for One More Match. You can follow me on Twitter at One More Match. That's one, number one, One More Match Pod. Give it a follow, and I'll see you there.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold sets it.
Okay, it's coming, as I said, from SummerSlam 2001, and this is in the peak era, I suppose, right in the middle of the whole invasion storyline with the alliance of ECW and WCW and Shane and Stephanie McMahon owning those companies, supposedly going up against the WWF to try and put them out of business. It's title versus title here, isn't it? So you've got Tajiri, who is the WWF light heavyweight champion, and X-Pac, who is the WCW cruiserweight champion. But I believe they're both WWF wrestlers, aren't they? They're not, neither of them are alliance, are they?
X-Pac was certainly WWF, and Tajiri had been brought in when ECW had folded, and he was kind of like the comic shtick with William Regal, who was the commissioner at that time. So they were both essentially on the same side, but battling for this match was actually just for the one title. So just to go into a little bit of the history, X-Pac had won the WCW Cruiserweight title from, I think it was Billy Kidman, and then he'd also won the light heavyweight title from Jeff Hardy, but then he dropped that to Tajiri on a Raw, and this was kind of like the rematch to kind of realign those titles.
Yeah, very much so. And they explained it as title versus title and stuff like that, didn't they? So,
even though only one title was actually on the line.
Yeah. Again, brilliant stuff, WWE. The event comes to us from the San Jose Center in San Jose, California. Mm-hmm. It's also the last SummerSlam under the WWF banner because of the name change when Vince lost a scrap with a panda and he had to alter the name of his company. Mm-hmm. Any pay-per-view from around this time, Mags, I really, really like. I was well into the product at this stage, even though we didn't get the invasion angle, the WCW versus WWF thing that we really wanted for various reasons, which we can go into on another show. I still really enjoyed what we were getting here. There's so many great matches and great storylines happening in this stacked roster at this time, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think the invasion angle gets quite a lot of stick. I think WWE or WWF at the time did an admirable job with what they had. You've got to remember at this time, we were hot off going into WrestleMania 17, which would end up being everybody's favourite WrestleMania or the majority of people's favourite WrestleMania. So Vince was juggling a hell of a lot of balls at the same time, and for him to be able to pull off WrestleMania and then the kind of the purchase of WCW, keep that storyline going well into the end of the year. It fizzled out a little bit, but I think he deserves a lot of praise for giving us really interesting and kind of a lot of dream matches in this run, especially knowing that the majority of the big name stars all sat at home on massive Time Warner paychecks.
Yeah, and you've got to remember as well, it was around this time that the original XFL was kicking off as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's something else they had to contend with, and obviously it wasn't going well when it did start, so that's another headache, I suppose, for the higher ups there. when I put this pay-per-view on, I'll be honest, I expected this match to be much earlier in the card than it was. So I literally just pressed play and sat there and waited. I ended up skipping a couple of matches to get to it. But I caught the beginning of the show. Now, we've got a great open with a brilliant video with a guy sat in what looks like a kind of mental health institute of some description, and Let the Bodies Hit the Floor by Drowning Pool is playing. And it just straight away took me back to that time.
Yeah.
You know, that era of WWF, the brilliant use of music. And it took me back to Cracker's Nightclub in Gloucester as well. Because on a Saturday night, they would do a rock night. And it was literally the only place in Gloucester you could go that played rock music, mate. The only place. And it was underneath a car park. And it was really small, dingy little place. And you'd walk in. And I mean, they literally tore it down like last year. It's been empty for yonks. And they tore it down last year. And it's quite sad because, you know, I spent many, many evenings in there. And it was Saturday afternoons, you'd have strippers in there. In the afternoon, and it was dog rest, man. It was terrible. And then in the evening, you'd have rock night on a Saturday, and you'd go in, and the floor's sticky, and the place stank, and you could buy cans over the bar, and they let you walk around.
Those are the classiest joints.
Yeah, and it was like literally one room. You had like a little mini dance floor in the middle, and then. Like almost like a donut around the outside of it was where people could sit, or they had a couple of pool tables tucked away. And then you had, as it approached the toilets at the back, it would go up a little bit. So it was sort of like halfway up again. And that's where you'd go and have a joint. And it was just a fantastic place. So many great memories there. But the reason Drowning Pool takes me back there is because you could almost guess, or you could almost not necessarily guess, you could estimate and probably get it right what time it was in the evening and night. I mean, this place stayed open till silly o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. You could almost guess what time it was by what record they were playing, because I swear to God, they only had one freaking rock playlist.
So just press play on the Spotify list and then just piss off.
Yeah, well, they were before Spotify. But yeah, similar sort of thing. Yeah. You know, this is, I mean, so if Drowning Pool by... Sorry, if Let the Bodies Hit the Floor by Drowning Pool was playing, you'd probably think, oh, okay, it's about 1 o'clock-ish, I might go get a kebab now, without having to actually look at your watch, you know, is that kind of...
But quality.
Also at the beginning of this event, man, there's pyro, there's signs, mm-hmm. there's jumpy camera angles that I don't actually mind. There's people in the crowd yelling and getting excited. You've got Jim Ross and Paul Heyman on commentary. Oh, I bloody loved it, Mags.
It's such a good pay-per-view. Really, really. And then you get the opener of Lance Storm and Edge, which is a banger.
Yeah, I watched that again. It was good. It was good, man. Both X-Pac and obviously Tajiri, as we mentioned, are champions of, I suppose, separate branches of the same division, I guess. Mm-hmm. They both come to the ring with their championship belts. And I love title belts, and I love looking at pictures and looking at old belts and so on. And I love both of these titles. I thought they were great. What did you think about these championship belts, Max?
Yeah, the Cruiserweight title, the WCW one, is one of my favourite WCW titles. It's so classy, really quality. I think for me, the light heavyweight was probably not on the same level of it. I thought it was a little bit too squared off almost. It kind of didn't fit like the theme of WWE titles around that time. But looking back at it now, it kind of has a reminiscent of the current NXT UK title for me.
Yeah, the shape of it's very similar, isn't it? it's quite a bit of plainness to it, I guess. Quite a bit of space on, and it almost reminds me in a way. And I said this on an episode of my other show, SJP Wrestling Podcast. I apologize, I can't remember who I was talking to. It might have been David Eaton, because we were discussing a pay per view from 2000. So you probably had the light heavyweight title involved there. But it came across very much like almost like an old school territory belt. It looked like you could have imagined that in Memphis or World Class or something like that.
Yeah, good shout. Yeah, it kind of it kind of did. And I think going tracing like the lineage of this title back, that makes a lot of sense, because it was like held by quite a few people from different territories and different companies, even though it was an officially WWF title.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense, actually, now you say that. Yeah, good shite. They mentioned that this is going to be, or Jim Ross, sorry, mentions this is going to be the last WWF pay-per-view on Direct TV.
I picked up on that straight away, and I thought, how ironic that that WrestleMania is now on Peacock. I thought, that's something that I didn't remember from the time, but I thought it's just a cool little throwback almost.
I made a note of that, so I would actually go and look into it a little bit to have a bit more information about what they're on about there. And I'm guessing they're leaving a pay-per-view provider, but I'm not going to lie. I made the note and completely forgot I made the note until I'm looking at it right now. So I've done literally no research or looking into that whatsoever, I'm afraid.
This was from a time before WWE basically did all their own work and put it on the network. This is where you had to phone up or contact a provider who would give you the pay-per-view, kind of like you used to have to do with Sky or with Virgin or BT Sport or stuff like that. Now it's easy, you just sign up to the network for £10 and get all the pay-per-views you want.
Yeah, exactly. For now.
For now.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to start having things edited in this country, you know. So,
well, that's the rumour. The rumour is that WWE are taking the lead from NBC and Peacock and looking to edit a lot of their older programming, which I understand the reason why, because there's a lot of kind of cringy and a lot of stuff that at the time may have felt like it worked, but right now it's quite jarring to watch. But I've always been of the view, and I think Disney do quite a similar thing of they put up a message before you watch anything on Disney Plus, and it says this was this show was from such and such a year, and thoughts and attitudes have changed, and just bear in mind that this was of its time, where I think with WWE trying to kind of almost delete history. I don't know if that's the right way to go about it, because if you kind of forget about history, you're almost doomed to repeat it. And I think it'll be hard to not be able to go back and look at where a company's gone wrong or where kind of mindsets have changed and they've deleted it. I don't get that kind of mindset.
No, it does seem a bit odd. I mean, putting like a disclaimer or some sort of warning beforehand would make so much sense. Mm-hmm. And having almost like, you could even have additional PIN numbers for people's kids not to sort of go into sections that they shouldn't do. And I mean, like, you put a program on the on-demand at home, and if it was, or a recording that you've made at like 10 o'clock at night, if it was like, you know, you're putting it on in the afternoon, you've got to enter your PIN to watch it for that. So, you know, it's there's ways around it. I mean, literally just putting a little disclaimer on, like, you know, pops up WrestleMania, I don't know, WrestleMania 1, and it's like, this was originally filmed in, what, 1985, when it was okay to have a big orange racist as your champion or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Just don't trash what everyone loves and take away the potential to look back, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that you look back now on, and it's absolutely cringy to watch. I mean, all the kind of Nation of Domination versus DX stuff when X-Pac did blackface and stuff like that. Yeah, it's abhorrent now, but I think if you delete it, you're kind of deleting the fact that WWE have made these strides. And then you look at the stuff like ECW with all the hardcore, the blood, the sex, the violence. You're going to lose big kind of like chunks of a wrestling history, and people are just not going to be able to watch what perhaps brought them into wrestling in the first place.
We might see like a resurgence in like DVDs or something, I suppose.
Yeah, tape trading. Get all the content recorded now on DVDs from the network, and you'll make a killing.
Yeah, I was convinced when the WWF went from WWF to WWE that there was all this stuff, and like I'd read in magazines and that the videos were going to be like in trouble because they couldn't have the WWF logos on. I ended up buying into it and spending a bloody fortune on WWF videos. Right, not thinking I was going to sell them on or anything like that, just for my own personal collection, thinking, oh shit, yeah. I might not be able to get these. I bought freaking tons of them, Mags. And it turned out that I didn't actually need to do that at all. So
no, because they struck a deal for like any historical program to be able to still have the logo. So
yeah.
you got your pants pulled down there, man.
Yes, standard practice. We have a very quick start to this match, as you can imagine, because you can expect Tajiri versus X-Pac halfway through a pay-per-view of this size isn't going to probably get a great deal of time, and both of these guys are incredibly talented.
What did he get? 7 minutes, maybe? Seven, yeah. 8 minutes? And these were two of probably the better kind of large wrestlers. I mean, X-Pac is kind of, an anomaly in wrestling, because he's 6'2", but he's got the frame of a lightweight. It's as simple as that. And he can hang with the bigger wrestlers, but also can still do the stuff that the smaller wrestlers could do. So he's got like the best of both worlds. And for me, Tajiri was so good in this era. For someone who didn't speak a lot of English, he was really charismatic. Some of the moves that he brought to the table was stuff that I'd never really seen a lot of. Stuff like the tarantula, the buzz kick. I thought that these two were two really underappreciated wrestlers. And I think X-Pac around this time was when he was really getting the X-Pac heat kind of stuff like that thrown at him. But I really enjoyed watching both these two guys.
Yeah, I thought it was a really, really good match as well. And we start with a couple of moonsaults from Tajiri, don't we? One in the ring, just a standing moonsault, then one from the ropes to the outside. Absolutely beautiful moonsaults. You mentioned the tarantula there. Does that hurt? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it looks flashy, but if you break it down, it probably doesn't hurt. Pretty much like the surfboard that X-Pac does on Tajiri a couple of times in this match. It doesn't look like it hurts, but it looks flashy, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, tarantula, what are your thoughts on spiders, Max? You scared of spiders? You got any problems with spiders?
They don't bother me whatsoever. I've got a couple of spider tattoos. The missus cannot stand them. This is how bad she is for spiders. I can do the spider movement with my hand, and she knows it's my hand. She can see it's my hand, but she'll freak out like it's a spider.
Brilliant. Arrows are fun, mate, yeah?
Honestly, it is. It's so, so funny. It's best when she don't know and you do it, and then you'll like crawl and she'll jump about 6 foot in the air because she thinks it's a spider.
See, I'm not as bothered by them now. I don't like them, you know? The big meaty bastards, you know the ones, you know? I'm not a fan.
I've also got another spider story. I was once working in a factory that shipped a lot of products from China. They worked in kind of like security bags. So, you know, like if you've got a secure mail, you'd like zip the bag up and then you could lock the bag and stuff like that. So a lot of the products were made in China. Anyway, part of my job was to kind of like unbox all these packages and find where they were to be put in the store and put them there. So anyway, I opened this box once and I'm there unpacking all these different kind of sizes of security bags, lift one up, and then there's this, and I'm not even kidding, it was the size of my hand, this massive, massive spider. Anyway, it reared its front legs at me, so I tried to stamp on it, and because it was in a factory, you're wearing steel toe cap boots, thought, here we go, one big squash spider. the spider took the boot from me and survived and then lunged at me. It was fucking ginormous, absolutely ginormous. I've never, like I said, spiders don't bother me, but I've never been that terrified of a of an insect in my life. It was huge. We ended up crushing it with a, I think it was with a fire extinguisher.
Jesus.
That's honestly horrible. it was massive. It was literally the size of a hand.
When you said that the spider took the boot from you, for some reason my mind actually went
like, to it
took
boot.
The boot. Yeah, it took the boot off you.
No, I tried to stamp on the spider, expecting
and
to
it no sold it.
It not only no sold it, it angered the spider. It pissed the spider off.
It hulked up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it flipped me.
Yeah, it weren't having it. It hulked up, started just going round you in circles, shaking its front arms. This incredible monster spider, and then it picked. You know, you say it took the boot. It picked your leg, put you in the ankle lock. Yeah,
it was the Hulk Hogan of spiders.
Yeah, I got a spider story, but it's traumatic for me as a kid looking back, mate. I don't know if I've told the story before on the show. If I have, I apologise, but I can't remember. I can't see why it would have come up, to be honest. But like I said, I'm okay with spiders now, purely because I'm a dad. I've got you know, several daughters. My wife's not a fan, so it kind of falls on me to be the person who gets rid of the spiders from the bedrooms and so on. So when you have to do it, or you're not getting any sleep because the girls are screaming, you kind of end up just having to do it, don't you? So I'm okay with it, you know. Again, these big meaty ones I'm not a fan of, but I still go and deal with it. When I was very little, age wise I don't know, I'll have to check with my parents, but I got up to go to the loo in the middle of the night, but late for me because I was very young. It was evening time. I had my pajamas on and so on, probably Street Hawk pajamas I had at that time. That's how young I was at that time. I had some Street Hawk pajamas.
That's a great throwback.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, putting my bottoms down as you do, sitting down to take my evening dump, and finishing up, sorting myself out. I stood up, looked down. There's a fucking great spider in the crotch of my pajama bottoms.
Oh Jesus, that's arachnophobia style.
Like again, in my head now, this thing was like the size of the Hulk Hogan spider that you're talking about. That's probably been exaggerated over time, you know? This thing was freaking huge. Of course, I'm screaming and jumping up and down. So all that happens is the spider goes down the trouser leg. And I'm screaming, and of course, my mum and dad come running up the stairs, wanting to know what's going on, strip the bloody jammer bottoms off me and get shot at the spider and whatnot. But that was it then. I was traumatised, mate. I'd get into bed and think there's spiders at the bottom of the bed, and I wouldn't put shoes on, and I was traumatized for like days and days and days, you know. So yeah, that's my wonderful spider in the pants story.
And now you need to book some therapy.
I think I do, mate. Now I'm just bringing it out, I'm talking to you about it now. I can feel emotions coming out that haven't happened, you know, for a long time. It's stirring something inside me, you know. It's therapeutic, this show, do you know what I mean?
It is, it certainly is.
It is indeed. Anyway, back to some wrestling. Yeah.
So, Tajiri does a tarantula.
Yeah. That does not end up in my pants or under your boot.
Definitely not.
On the note of wrestling moves, actually, or not so great wrestling moves, the Bronco Buster. I hate that move.
Yeah, it absolutely makes no sense to me. Who wants X-Pac's dick in the face? I mean... Mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. But no, not good, not good. And it just makes me cringe. It's one of those moments where if somebody walks in who's not a fan and they see that, it's just embarrassing.
It's idiotic. And I don't get what it actually does. Because if you're sat in the middle of the row, if you're sat in the corner, it doesn't do any damage to you, does it?
No.
It's a weird move. But he got it over, I suppose.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio does it as well, doesn't he? I just don't like it at all.
No, it's one of those kind of nonsensical things about wrestling.
Yeah, definitely. We got some very clever pin attempts from both. Tajiri with a sort of really unusual... Oh, it almost ends up being a backslide as he ties up the guy's arms and rolls around on the deck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, really, really good stuff. And again, they fit so much into this 7 and a bit minutes. Everything is so fast, but it's so crisp as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I like the way as well that after every kind of like big spot, the crowd was popping for Tajiri. When he did the baseball slide and then the acai moonsault off the second rope to the outside, the crowd were eating it up. It was so, so popular. And then it gets, for me, kind of gets ruined when Albert gets involved.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand why Albert was involved, obviously being part of X Factor and being on the side of X-Pac. But for me, this match was going really, really well. It was a very kind of like entertaining middle of a pay-per-view, kind of like a palate cleanser of a match. And then out comes Albert, gets the red mist in his face and then causes the finish when X-Pac does the X-Factor and beats Tajiri and becomes a double champion.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a shame that he comes out and does that, but I suppose, well, it's WWF. These things happen all the time, don't they, I guess?
Yeah.
Before that moment, in the few minutes they had, I really, really enjoyed it, Max. We'd normally rate things out of 10 here. Do you want to go first or second, mate?
Well, just before I do that, I wanted to kind of like give a little bit of context, because this is actually a really important match in like the history of the WWF light heavyweight title.
Oh yeah, of course.
It's,
yeah.
It's the actual last match that you see this title on a pay-per-view. Mm. After this, X-Pac goes and loses the WCW Cruiserweight title to Billy Kidman, but unfortunately picks up a bit of an injury and then has to like kind of like take a bit of time off. And by the time he's come back, WWF have kind of like dissolved the lightweight title. So outside a few kind of house show events, you don't really see this title again. And then you don't see a lot of X-Pac until he comes back when the NWO is reformed in WWE, and he's part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's funny, isn't it, how these titles kind of come and go, and yeah, and you look at some of it, like the European titles around this time as well, wasn't it? I love that belt, and it seemed important on some occasions, and then other occasions not so much, and then it just kind of disappeared, and they tried to get rid of the IC title the following year, and just strange, isn't it, how things like this happen.
Yep, and then you go across to New Japan, and they've amalgamated their two biggest titles, and they've made one of the probably the worst looking titles in recent memory.
It's not great, is it?
No, it looks the comparisons to the Women's Divas title, I just can't unsee it anymore. It just looks like a butterfly. But yeah, it's a shame, because you look back at the lineage of this this lightweight title, and it's been held by some really big names, and for it to just kind of like peter out and kind of like just be brushed under the carpet and not given like a cool send off, it's a bit of a shame, really.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think for me this is a solid 7. I enjoyed what they did. The ending wasn't great. It was very short. I'd like to maybe another 5 minutes or so. But yeah, okay, quite short. Maybe a 6.5 then for me.
Yeah, I can see your reasoning. I think that may be a bit too much for me, just because of the things you mentioned, the fact that it was so short. I'd have liked to have seen these guys get another 5-10 minutes. The fact that it ended with the way it did with Albert, that kind of for me took the wind out of the sails of this match, and I thought that it really kind of like negated all the good work that they were doing and the kind of like the crowd appreciation that they were getting. So I think I'd go for a 6. No more than a 6, okay. I think.
Okay, fair enough. Slight difference, but not much. The last match that, well, either of us gave a 6 was the Austin and Rock versus NWO handicap match way back on episode 3. My little reliable spreadsheet shows me here. God, I'm clever, and I look at that. Look at me using technology, Mags. Hey, look at that.
This is a guy who invented having a mobile phone and having it attached to the wall. He's just such a clever guy. Internet attached to the wall. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Well, it works. Look, it's working now. It's great.
It does. Yeah, it absolutely does work.
Okay, I suppose what's left is for us to decide where we're going next week, so the fantastic people on Twitter can vote at @chain_wrestling there for the polls. Mags, do you want to go first or second, my friend?
I'll go first. As I mentioned, this was the kind of the end of the line for the lightweight title, and also one of the last times you'd see X-Pac until he would be back as part of the NWO. Now, if you remember the NWO from its beginnings, X-Pac was in there from pretty early on in the NWO. He was kind of like the WCW cruiserweight member for the NWO. So I wanted to keep on that NWO theme, and I was actually going to go with maybe the way the NWO started. I thought we'd visit Bash at the Beach 1996, and that 6-man match that actually ended up being essentially a 4-on-2 for the Hostile Takeover match. But then I thought, you know what, that's a little bit too obvious. So I wanted to revisit something that we've spoke about quite a few times over the times that we've done podcasting together, Simon, and I wanted to revisit War Games.
Ooh.
Now, in Fall Brawl 1997, the NWO was involved in War Games, and X-Pac was also involved in that. So that's the very tenuous link to this match. So I'm going to go with the main event from Fall Brawl 1997, and it was the NWO, which was Buff Bagwell, Kevin Nash, Six, a.k.a. X-Pac, and Conan. And they took on the Four Horsemen, who were stalwarts of the War Games matches, with Benoit, Mongo McMichael, Ric Flair, and the former Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig.
That's a great show. I love WCW. I love the NWO. I love the Horsemen. I mean, love War Games. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. That's an absolutely great shape, that is. That's an excellent choice. Yeah, okay, that's great. So, Fall Brawl 97, the War Games match between the NWO and the Four Horsemen. Yeah, brilliant shape, Max. Excellent stuff. Do not mind losing to that if that's what happens, mate. I'll tell you that now.
Well, we shall see.
Okay, yeah, well, basically, mine's gone a slightly different route, using Tajiri initially. Obviously, he was in the WWF and then WWE for a few years, different periods. He was there initially as an enhancement talent before this period, then departed and then came back and wrestled in the cruiserweight division, the tag divisions, and so on. With Tajiri, though, despite being around in his second run for quite a few years, he was there for a while, Max, wasn't he? Sort of into the Ruthless Aggression era, as it's called. He was still hanging around a little bit then, wasn't he?
I think he was there about 8 years, maybe. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. He had a good run, and he was in many different feuds and sometimes comedy segments, excellent matches. I mean, the guy was just brilliant, I thought. But he never actually won a match at WrestleMania. Believe it or not. Well, you probably can believe it. I mean, it's Tajiri. It's not like
he's not the Undertaker. No, I'm sure.
Exactly. He never actually won a match at WrestleMania, which is a shame, I suppose, for someone who's been with the company for quite a few years, and he worked a great deal of matches for them. But yeah, he never got the job done at WrestleMania. Someone else who couldn't get the job done at WrestleMania was Hulk Hogan, and he had to call in his friend, the Ultimate Warrior, to help him save the world at SummerSlam 1991. So I'm thinking, Mags, that's where we might go next week, mate.
you're going to milk this forever, aren't you? This, you're going to now change your mind and say, yeah, we're not going there.
Well, no, we're not going to go there. let's see how that develops next week.
I'd killed Hulkamania, but here he is, rising his ugly, bald, orange head again.
Oh, mate, it's not about Hogan. It's about Phil Collins' partner in crime. It's about the Warrior, because Hogan couldn't get the job done. Hogan couldn't save the world. He needed to call in the Warrior, and they had to sort it out SummerSlam, didn't they? So, in a match, Dave Meltzer rates worse than the WrestleMania 7 one. So, there's something for us to look forward to.
It's like the sword of Damocles hanging over our heads forever.
What I'm actually going to do is a lot more straightforward. And it's funny you mention War Games, because that's obviously a multi-man match and fantastic stipulation and very historic. Lots of great matches there. I'm going to use the arena, the San Jose Arena, where SummerSlam 2001 was. I'm going to go back a few years to another pay-per-view that was held in that arena, and that was the Royal Rumble 1998 pay-per-view. And I'm actually going to choose the Royal Rumble match itself. Now, my reasoning behind that isn't because it's a Rumble and they can be great fun to watch and sometimes a bit daft or whatever. This is 1998 Royal Rumble. We all know who wins. We all know what happens at WrestleMania 14 that year. This, to me, is very much the big explosion of, okay, the Austin era is here. He was getting pushed beforehand, of course. He won the world title at WrestleMania 14. But this Rumble performance by Austin with, you know, the corporation or McMahon's sort of henchmen all gunning for him and so on, I think it's a great performance by Steve Austin. So I'm going to put forward the actual Rumble itself, with a view also of, if that wins, that opens up so many possibilities for where we could go the week after, Mags.
Well, yeah, because you've got dozens of rumbles. You've got 30 entrants in the match. You've got people who went and won rumbles and went on to WrestleMania. Yeah, it gives a lot of kind of scope for where we go. And to be fair, I would happily rewatch this Royal Rumble, because the two 97-98 Rumbles are two of my favourites.
See, that's it. 98, I know I've enjoyed. But I've not seen it in such a long time, which is kind of why I leant towards picking it, because I thought I wouldn't mind going back and watching that again, because it has been so long since I've watched it. So
Yeah,
so there we go. Two multi-person. Yeah. We have the excellent Four Brawl 97 War Games match between the NWO and the Four Horsemen. It's a brilliant snippet of what's going on in WCW at that time, with two factions that are historically really important, and it's a great contest. Or we have the Royal Rumble match itself from 1998, and it really kicking off fully for Mr. Austin. Yeah, I guess that is it then, Mags. I'll dig out the Ultimate Warrior singing with Phil Collins and get the link sent across to you. I will tag it on the end of this episode for people to see as well if they have not seen it. It is an excellent, excellent thing to behold. Mags, do I let people know whereabouts they can find you on Twitter, bud?
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at DAJ Kirkby, where links to all the content that I am involved in will be there. One thing I do want to give a very quick shout out to is a little WrestleMania project I've been involved in over on Chairshot with the likes of Ray Cash, Chris Platt and PC Tunney, where they've been taking WrestleManias in blocks of six and kind of like giving a review of them, all leading all the way up to this weekend's extravaganza, I suppose is the best way to put it. But it'd be really cool if you went to check them out, because it's been a genuine labour of love for us all.
Yeah, great stuff. And you can find me at SJP Words, and you can also find the show on Twitter, of course, at @chain_wrestling, where you can listen to our stuff, let us know what you think of the show, keep interacting. We love it. It's fantastic. This show would not be anywhere near as much fun for Mags and I if you were not involved. This is very
absolutely
much very much your show. This is what we're trying to make happen. It's very much the people who listen and the people who tweet in and so on. It's very much your show. The poll will be up probably around the same time as the Ultimate Warrior Phil Collins video, sometime within the next hour to a day after the episode goes up. It tends to work quite well that way, so look out for that. Yeah, and that's @chain_wrestling. I'm off now to seek out the famous Earthquake single with Shaken Stevens. Mags, I will speak to you next week, my friend.
Yep, speak to you next week. Jesus Christ, Shaken Stevens.
Hey, nothing wrong with a bit of shaky, mate.
Yeah, I mean, what did Green Door? Did a song called Green Door, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Lovely bit of shaky. I'll speak to you next week, pal.
See you later.
Da-da.
Green Door, what's that secret you're keeping?